Babbel.com, language for life. Why Babbel? When you want to learn a new language, you want to be able to actually use it with real people in the real world. Every part of Babbel is designed with that goal in mind. Designed by pros, lessons with realistic scenarios, designed by over 100 linguists. Use what you know. Interactive dialogues that get you speaking confidently. Learn on any device. Compatibility with most devices with lessons that are only 10 to 15 minutes. Remember everything. Reviews that bring back everything you've learned. Number one selling language learning app. Oh, download the app today and start learning language for your everyday life from the App Store or Google Play. Choose how to learn. To start with Babbel, choose the plan that works best for you. Babbel app subscription. Get unlimited access to hundreds of award-winning lessons designed for all learners based on level and time commitment. Babbel live subscription. You'll have access to live virtual classes taught by top language teachers available at a variety of days, times, and levels. Plus access to all Babbel online lessons. People love Babbel. Thousands of five-star reviews. Publications love Babbel. The Wall Street Journal, Business Insider, CNN, Forbes, The New York Times, The Washington Post, USA Today, CNET. Choose from the following languages: Spanish, French, German, Italian, Russian, Portuguese, Turkish, Dutch, Swedish, Polish, Norwegian, Indonesian, Danish, over 10 million subscriptions sold. Good morning. Today's Florida story is Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis Part 1. Jacqueline Lee Kennedy Onassis Nee Bouvier, July 28, 1929 to May 19, 1992, was an American social writer, photographer, and book editor who served as First Lady of the United States from 1961 to 1963 as the wife of President John F. Kennedy. A popular First Lady, she endeared the American public with her devotion to her family, dedication to the historic preservation of the White House, the campaign she led to preserve and restore historic landmarks and architecture, along with her interest in American history, culture, and arts. During her lifetime, she was regarded as an international icon for her unique fashion choices, and her work as a cultural ambassador of the United States made her very popular globally. After studying history and art at Vassar College and graduating with a Bachelor of Arts in French Literature from George Washington University in 1951, Bouvier started working for the Washington Times Herald as an inquiring photographer. The following year, she met then-Congressman John Kennedy at a dinner party in Washington. He was elected to the Senate that same year, and the couple married on September 12, 1953. In Newport, Rhode Island, they had four children, two of whom died in infancy. Following her husband's election to the presidency in 1960, Kennedy was known for her highly publicized restoration of the White House and emphasis on arts and culture, as well as for her style. She also traveled to many countries where her fluency in foreign language and history made her very popular. At age 31, she was the third First Lady of the United States when her husband was inaugurated and was named Time Magazine's Woman of the Year in 1962. After the assassination and funeral of her husband in 1963, Kennedy and her children largely withdrew from public view. In 1968, she remarried Greek shipping magnate Aristotle Onassis, which caused controversy. Following Onassis' death in 1975, she had a career as a book editor in New York City, first at Viking Press and then at Doubleday, and worked to restore her public image. Even after her death, she ranks as one of the most popular and recognizable first ladies in American history. And in 1999, she was listed as one of Gallup's most admired men and women of the 20th century. She died in 1994 and was buried at Arlington National Cemetery alongside President Kennedy. Surveys of historians conducted periodically by the Indiana College Research Institute, which since 1992 have consistently found Kennedy Onassis to rank among the most highly regarded first ladies by the assessments of historians. Early life, 1929 to 1951, family and childhood. Jacqueline Lee Bouvier was born on July 28, 1929 at Southampton Hospital in Southampton, New York, into Wall Street sucker John Verneau Blackjack Bouvier III and socialite Janet Norton Lee. Her mother was of Irish descent and her father had French, Scottish, and English ancestry. Named after her father, she was baptized at the Church of St. Ignatius Loyola in Manhattan and raised in the Roman Catholic faith. Carolyn Lee, her younger sister, was born 4 years later on March 3, 1933. Jacqueline Bouvier spent her early childhood years in Manhattan and at La Salle, the Bouvier's country estate in East Hampton and on Long Island. She looked up to her father, who likewise favored her over her sister, calling his elder child the most beautiful daughter man ever had. Biographer Tina Santi Flaherty reports Jacqueline's early confidence herself, seeing a link to her father's prayers and positive attitude toward her, and her sister Lee Radziwill say that Jacqueline would not have gained her independence and individuality had it not been for the relationship she had with her father and paternal grandfather John Bernard Bouvier Jr. From an early age, Jacqueline was an enthusiastic equestrian and successfully competed in the sport, and horse riding remained her lifelong passion. She took ballet lessons, was an avid reader, and excelled at learning foreign languages, including French, Spanish, and Italian. French was particularly emphasized in her upbringing. In 1935, Jacqueline Bouvier was enrolled in Manhattan's Chapin School, where she attended grades 1 through 7. She was a bright student and often misbehaved. One of her teachers described her as a darling child, the prettiest little girl, very clever, very artistic, and full of the devil. Her mother attributed this behavior to her finishing her assignments ahead of the classes and then acting out in boredom. Her behavior improved after the headmistress warned her that none of her positive qualities would matter if she did not behave. The marriage of the Bouviers was strained by the father's alcoholism and extramarital affairs. The family had also struggled with financial issues following the Wall Street crash in 1929. They separated in 1936 and divorced 4 years later, with the press publishing intimate details of the split. According to her cousin John H. Davis, Jacqueline was deeply affected by the divorce and subsequently had a tendency to withdraw frequently to the private world of her own. When her mother married Standard Oil heir Hugh Dudley Aiken Kloss Jr., the Bouviers did not attend the ceremony because it was arranged quickly and travel was restricted due to World War II. They gained 3 step-siblings from Auchin Kloss's previous marriages, Hugh Yusha Auchincloss III, Thomas Gore Auchincloss, and Nina Gore Auchincloss. Jacqueline formed the closest bond with Yusha, who became one of her most trusted confidants. The marriage later produced 2 more children, Janet Jennings Auchincloss in 1945 and James Lee Auchincloss in 1947. After the remarriage, Auchincloss's Marywood estate in McLean, Virginia became the Bouvier's primary residence, although they also spent time at his other estate, Hammersmith Farm, in Newport, Rhode Island, and in their father's homes in New York City and Long Island. Although she retained a relationship with her father, Jacqueline Bouvier also regarded Stefan as a close paternal figure. He gave her a stable environment and the pampered childhood she otherwise would have never experienced. While adjusting to her mother's remarriage, she sometimes felt like an outsider in the WASP social circle of the Auchincloss, attributing the feeling to her being Catholic as well as being a child of divorce, which was not common in that social group at that time. After 7 years at Chapin, Jacqueline Bouvier attended the Holton Arms School in Northwest Washington, D.C. from 1942 to 1944, and Miss Porter School in Farmington, Connecticut from 1944 to 1947. She chose Miss Porter because it was a boarding school that allowed her to distance herself from the Austin classes, and because the school placed an emphasis on college preparatory classes. In her senior class yearbook, Bouvier was acknowledged for her wit, her accomplishment as a horsewoman, and her unwillingness to become a housewife. She later hired her childhood friend Nancy Tuckerman to be her social secretary at the White House. She graduated among the top students of her class and received the Maria McKinney Memorial Award for Excellence in Literature. College and early career. In the fall of 1947, Jacqueline Bouvier entered Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York. At that time, a women's institution, she had wanted to attend Sarah Lawrence College, closer to New York City, but her parents insisted that she choose the more isolated Vassar. She was an accomplished student who participated in the school's art and drama clubs and wrote for its newspaper, due to her dislike at Vassar's location in Poughkeepsie. She did not take an active part in its social life, but instead traveled back to Manhattan for the weekend. She had made her debut to high society in the summer before entering college and became a frequent presence in New York social functions. Hearst columnist Igor Cassini dubbed her the debutante of the year. She spent her junior year 1849 to 1950 in France at the University of Grenoble and at the Sorbonne in Paris in a study abroad program through Smith College. Upon returning home, she transferred to George Washington University in Washington, D.C., graduating with a Bachelor of Arts degree in French Literature in 1951. During the early years of marriage to John F. Kennedy, she took continued education classes in American history at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. While attending George Washington, Jacqueline Bouvier won a 12-month junior editorship at Vogue magazine. She had been selected over several hundred other women nationwide. The position entailed working for 6 months in the magazine's New York City office and spending the remaining 6 months in Paris. Before beginning the job, she celebrated her college graduation and her sister Lee's high school graduation by traveling with her to Europe for the summer. The trip was the subject of her only autobiography, One Special Summer, co-authored with Lee. It is also the only one of her published works to feature Jacqueline Bouvier's drawings. On her first day at Vogue, the managing editor advised her to quit and go back to Washington. According to biographer Barbara Leeming, the editor was concerned about Bouvier's marriage prospects. She was 22 years of age and was considered too old to be single. In her social circles, she followed the advice, left the job, and returned to Washington after only one day of work. Bouvier moved back to Marywood and was referred by a family friend to the Washington Times Herald, where editor Frank Waldrop hired her as a part-time receptionist. A week later, she requested more challenging work, and Waldrop sent her to city editor Sidney Epstein, who hired her as an inquiring camera girl. Despite her inexperience, paying her $25 a week, he recalled, "I remember her as this very attractive, cute as hell girl, and all the guys in the newsroom giving her a good look." The position required her to pose witty questions to individuals chosen at random on the street and take the pictures for publication in the newspaper alongside selected quotations from their responses. In addition to the random man on the street vignettes, she sometimes saw interviews with people of interest, such as 6-year-old Trisha Nixon. Bouvier interviewed Trisha a few days after her father, Richard Nixon, was elected to the vice president in the 1952 election. During this time, Bouvier was briefly engaged to a young stockbroker named John Husted. After only a month of dating, the couple published an announcement in the New York Times in January 1952. After 3 months, she called off the engagement because she had found him immature and boring once she got to know him better. Marriage to John F. Kennedy. Jacqueline Bouvier and U.S. Representative John F. Kennedy belonged to the same social circle and were formally introduced by a mutual friend, journalist Charles L. Bartlett. At a dinner party in May 1950, she was attracted to Kennedy's physical appearance, wit, and wealth. The pair also shared the similarities of Catholicism, writing, enjoying reading, and having previously lived abroad. Kennedy was busy running for the U.S. Senate seat in Massachusetts, but she grew more serious as he proposed to her after the November election. Bouvier took time to accept because she had been assigned to the cover of the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II in London for the Washington Times Herald. After a month in Europe, she returned to the United States and accepted Kennedy's marriage proposal. She then resigned from her position in the newspaper. Their engagement was officially announced on June 25th, 1953. She was 24 and he was 36. Bouvier and Kennedy married on September 12, 1953 at St. Mary's Church in Newport, Rhode Island, in a mass celebrated by Boston's Archbishop Richard Cushing. The wedding was considered the social event of the season, which was with an estimated 700 guests at the ceremony and 1,200 at the reception that followed at Hammersmith Farm. The wedding dress was designed by Ann Lowe of New York City and is now housed in the Kennedy Library in Boston, Massachusetts. The dresses of her attendants were also created by Lowe, who was not credited by Jacqueline Kennedy. The newlyweds honeymooned in Acapulco, Mexico, before settling in their new home, Hickory Hill, in McLean, Virginia, in a suburb of Washington, D.C. Kennedy developed a warm relationship with their parents-in-law, Joseph and Rose Kennedy. In the early years of their marriage, the couple faced several personal setbacks. John Kennedy suffered from Addison's disease and from chronic and at times debilitating back pain, which had been exhausted by a war injury in late 1954. He ended with a near-fatal final operation. Additionally, Jacqueline Kennedy suffered a miscarriage in 1955 and in August 1956 gave birth to stillborn daughter Arabella. instead of his soldier on Hickory Hill estate to Kennedy's brother Robert, who occupied it with his wife Ethel and their growing family, and bought a townhouse on N Street in Georgetown. The Kennedys also resided at an apartment at 122 Bedallen Street in Boston, their permanent Massachusetts residence during John's congressional career. Kennedy gave birth to daughter Carolyn on November 27, 1957. At the time, she and her husband were campaigning for his re-election to the Senate, and they posed with their infant daughter for the cover of the April 21, 1950 issue of Life magazine. They traveled together during the campaign as part of their efforts to reduce the physical separation that characterized the first 5 years of their marriage. Soon enough, John Kennedy started to notice the value that his wife added to his congressional campaign. Kenneth O'Donnell remembered that the size of the crowd was twice as big when she accompanied her husband. He also recalled her as always cheerful and obliging. John's mother, Rose, however, observed that Jacqueline was not a natural-born campaigner due to her shyness and was uncomfortable with too much attention. In November 1958, John was re-elected to a second term. He created Jacqueline's visibility in the ads and stumping as vital assets in securing his victory, and he called her simply invaluable. In July 1959, the historian Arthur M. Schlesinger visited the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport and had his first conversation with Jacqueline Kennedy. He found her to have tremendous awareness and all-seeing eye and a ruthless judgment. That year, John Kennedy traveled the 14 states, but Jacqueline took long breaks from the trips to spend time with her daughter, Carolyn. She also counseled her husband on improving his wardrobe in preparation for the presidential campaign planned for the following year. In particular, she traveled to Louisiana to visit Edmund Reggie and to help her husband garner support in the state for his presidential bid. First Lady of the United States, 1961 to 1963. Campaign for presidency. On January 2, 1960, John F. Kennedy was a United States Senator from Massachusetts. He announced his candidacy for the president and launched his campaign nationwide. In the early months of the election year, Jacqueline Kennedy accompanied her husband to campaign events such as whistle stops and dinners. Shortly after the campaign began, she became pregnant due to her previous high-risk pregnancy. She decided to stay at home in Georgetown. Jacqueline Kennedy subsequently participated in the campaign by writing a weekly syndicated newspaper column, Campaign Live, answering correspondence, and giving interviews to the media. Despite her non-participation in the campaign, Kennedy became the subject of intense media attention with her fashion choices. On one hand, she was admired for her personal style. She was frequently featured in women's magazines alongside film stars and named as one of the 12 best-dressed women in the world. On the other hand, her preference for French designs and her spending on her wardrobe brought her negative press. In order to downplay her wealthy background, Kennedy stressed the amount of work she was doing for the campaign and declined to publicly discuss her clothing choices. On July 13th, at the 96th Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles, and the party nominated John F. Kennedy for president, Jacqueline Kennedy did not attend the nomination due to her pregnancy, which had been publicly announced 10 days earlier. She was in Hyannisport when she watched the September 26, 1960 debate, which was the nation's first televised presidential debate between her husband and Republican candidate Richard Nixon, who was the incumbent vice president. Marion Cannon, the wife of Arthur Schlesinger, watched the debate with her. Days after the debate, Jacqueline Kennedy contacted Schlesinger and informed that John wanted his aid along with that of John Kenneth Galbraith. In preparing for the third debate on October 13th, she wished for them to give her husband new ideas and speeches. On September 29, 1960, the Kennedys appeared together for a joint interview on person-to-person, interviewed by Charles Collingwood. As First Lady, on November 1960, John F. Kennedy narrowly defeated Republican opponent Richard Nixon in the U.S. presidential election a little over 2 weeks later. On November 25th, Jacqueline Kennedy gave birth to the couple's first son, John F. Kennedy Jr. She spent 2 weeks recuperating in the hospital, during which the most minute details of both her and her son's conditions were reported by the media in what has been considered the first instance of national interest in the Kennedy family. Kennedy's husband was sworn in as president on January 20th, 1961 At 31, Kennedy was the third youngest woman to serve as First Lady, as well as the first third generation First Lady. She insisted they also kept the family home away from the public eye and ran to Glen Orr at Middleburg as a presidential couple. The Kennedys differed from the Eisenhowers by their political affiliation, youth, and their relationship with the media. Historian Gil Troy has noted that in particular they emphasized vague appearances rather than specific accomplishments or passionate commitments, and therefore fit in well in the early 1960s cool TV oriented culture. The discussion about Kennedy's fashion choices continued during her years in the White House, and she became a trendsetter, hiring American designer Oleg Cassini to design her wardrobe. She was the first presidential wife to hire press secretary Pamela Tournier, and carefully managed her contract with the media, usually shying away from making public statements, and strictly in controlling the extent to which her children were photographed. The media portrayed Kennedy as the ideal woman, which led academic Maureen Beasley to observe that she created an unrealistic media expectation for First Ladies that would challenge her successors. Nevertheless, she attracted worldwide positive public attention and gained allies for the White House and international support for the Kennedy administration and its Cold War policies. Although Kennedy stated that her priority as a first lady was to take care of the president and their children, she also dedicated her time to the promotion of American arts and preservation of its history. Their restoration in the White House was her main contribution, but she also furthered the cause by hosting social events that brought together elite figures from politics and the arts. One of her unrealized goals was to found a Department of the Arts, but she did contribute to the establishment of the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities established during Johnson's tenure. White House Restoration. Kennedy had visited the White House on two occasions before she became First Lady. The first time as a grade school tourist in 1941, and again as a guest of outgoing First Lady Mamie Eisenhower shortly before her husband's inauguration. She was dismayed to find that the baby mansion's home rooms were furnished with undistinguished pieces that displayed little historical significance, and made it her first major project as First Lady to restore its historical character. On her first day in residence, she began her efforts with the help of interior decorator Sister Parrish. She decided to make the family quarters attractive and suitable for family life by adding a kitchen on the family floor and new rooms for her children. The $500,000 that had been appropriate for this effort was almost immediately exhausted. Continuing the project, she established a fine arts committee to oversee and fund the restoration process, and solicited the advice of early American furniture expert Henry DuPont. To solve the funding problem, a White House guidebook was published, sales of which were used for the restoration. Working with Rachel Lambert Mellon, Jacqueline Kennedy also oversaw the redesign and replanting of the Rose Garden and the East Garden, which was named the Jacqueline Kennedy Garden after her husband's assassination. In addition, Kennedy helped to stop the destruction of historic homes in Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C., because she felt these buildings were an important part of the nation's capital and played an essential role in its history. She helped stop the destruction of historic buildings along the square, including the Renwick Building, now part of the Smithsonian Institution, and her support of historic preservation also reached beyond the United States as she brought international attention to the 13th century BC temples of Abu Simbel that were in danger of being flooded by Egypt's Aswan Dam. Prior to Kennedy's years as First Lady, presidents and their families had taken furnishings and other items from the White House when they departed. This led to the lack of original historical pieces in the mansion. She personally wrote to possible donors in order to track down these missing furnishings and other historical pieces of interest. Jacqueline Kennedy initiated a congressional bill establishing that White House furnishings would be the property of the Smithsonian Institution rather than available to departing ex-presidents to claim as their own. She also founded the White House Historical Association, the Committee for the Preservation of the White House, the position of a permanent curator of the White House, the White House Endowment Trust, and the White House Acquisition Trust. She was the first presidential spouse to hire a White House curator. On February 14, 1962, Jacqueline Kennedy, accompanied by Charles Collingwood of CBS News, took American television viewers on a tour of the White House. In the tour, she stated that, "I feel so strongly that the White House should have a as fine a collection of American pictures as possible, it's so important the setting in which the presidency is presented to the world, to foreign visitors. The American people should be proud of it. We have such a great civilization. So many foreigners don't realize it. I think this house should be the place we see them best. The film was watched by 56 million television viewers in the United States and was later distributed to 106 countries. Kennedy won a special Academy of Television Arts and Science Trustees Award for it at the Emmy Awards in 1962, which is set on her behalf by Lady Bird Johnson. Kennedy was the only first lady to win an Emmy. Foreign trips. Jackie Kennedy was a cultural ambassador of the United States, known for her cultural and diplomatic work globally, and would travel sometimes without President John F. Kennedy to different countries to promote cultural exchange and diplomatic relations. She was highly regarded by foreign dignitaries as she used her fluency in foreign languages such as French, Spanish, and Italian, as well as her cultural knowledge to establish strong relations with foreign leaders and to give speeches in different countries. She is awarded the French Legion of Honor, the highest civilian award given by the French government, becoming the first lady and first American woman to win, which was a testament to her language skills and cultural knowledge. Her role as cultural ambassador had an essential impact on the cultural diplomacy and helped strengthen ties between the United States and other countries. Jacqueline Kennedy's language skills and cultural knowledge were highly respected by the French people, and her visit to France with President Kennedy in 1962 was seen as a great success. During the visit, she made a speech in French at the American University in Paris, which was widely praised for its eloquence and fluency. In her speech, Jacqueline Kennedy spoke about the importance of cultural exchange between France and the United States, and she emphasized the shared values and history of the two nations. Throughout her husband's presidency and more than any of the preceding first ladies, Kennedy made many official visits to other countries on her own or with the president. Despite the initial worry that she might not have political appeal, she proved popular among international dignitaries. Before the Kennedy's first visit to France in 1961, a television special was shot in French with the First Lady on the White House lawn. After arriving in the country, she impressed the public with her ability to speak French, as well as her extensive knowledge of French history. At the conclusion of the visit, Time magazine seemed delighted with the First Lady and noted there was also that fellow who came with her. Even President Kennedy joked, "I am the man who accompanied Jacqueline Kennedy to Paris, and I have enjoyed it." From France, the Kennedys traveled to Vienna, Austria, where Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev was asked to shake the president's hand for a photo. He replied, "I'd like to shake her hand first." Khrushchev later sent her a puppy, Pushinka. The animal was significant for being the offspring of Stryka, the dog that had gone to space during a Soviet space mission. At the urging of U.S. Ambassador to India, John Kenneth Galbraith Kennedy undertook a tour of India and Pakistan with his sister Lee Radziwill. In 1962, the tour was amply documented in photojournalism as well as Galbraith's journals and memoirs. The president of Pakistan, Ayub Khan, had given her a horse named Sardar as a gift. He had found out on his visit to the White House that he and the First Lady had a common interest in horses. Life magazine correspondent Ann Chamberlain wrote that Kennedy conducted herself magnificently, although noting that her crowds were smaller than those that President Dwight Eisenhower and Queen Elizabeth II attracted when they had visited these countries. In addition to these well-publicized trips during the 3 years of the Kennedy administration, she traveled to countries including Afghanistan, Austria, Canada, Colombia, United Kingdom, Greece, Italy, Mexico, Morocco, Turkey, and Venezuela. Unlike her husband, Kennedy was fluent in Spanish, which she used to address Latin American audiences. Death of infant son. In early 1960, Kennedy was again pregnant, which led her to curtail her official duties. She spent most of the summer at a home as she and the president had rented on Squaw Island, which was near the Kennedy compound on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. On August 7th, 5 weeks ahead of her scheduled due date, she went into labor and gave birth to a boy, Patrick Bouvier Kennedy, via emergency C-section at nearby Otis Air Force Base. The infant's lungs were not fully developed, and he was transferred from Cape Cod to Boston Children's Hospital, where he died of hyaline membrane disease 2 days after birth. Kitty has remained at Otis Air Force Base to recuperate after the cesarean delivery. Her husband went to Boston to be with their infant son and was present when he died. On August 14th, the president returned to Otis to take her home and gave an impromptu speech to thank nurses and airmen who had gathered in her suite. In appreciation, the presented hospital staff. She presented hospital staff with framed and signed lithographs of the White House. The First Lady was deeply affected by Patrick's death and proceeded to enter a state of depression. However, the loss of their child had a positive impact on the marriage and brought the couple closer together in their shared grief. Arthur Schlesinger wrote that while John Kennedy always regarded Jackie with genuine affection and pride, their marriage never seemed more solid than in the later months of 1963. Jacqueline Kennedy's friend, Aristotle Onassis, was aware of her depression and invited her to his yacht to recuperate. President Kennedy initially had a reservation, but he relented because he believed that it would be good for her. The trip was widely disapproved of within the Kennedy administration by much of the general public, and in Congress, the First Lady returned to the United States in October 1966. She would later say she regretted being away as long as she was, but had been melancholy after the death of my baby. Assassination funeral of John F. Kennedy. On November 21st, 1966, the First Lady and the President embarked on a political trip to Texas with several goals in mind. This was the first time she had joined her husband on such a trip in the U.S. After a breakfast on November 23rd, they took a very short flight on Air Force One from Fort Worth Carswell Air Force Base to Dallas's Love Field, accompanied by Texas Governor John Connally and his wife, Nellie. The First Lady was wearing a bright pink Chanel suit and a pillbox hat, which had been personally selected by President Kennedy. A 9.5-mile, 15.3-kilometer motorcade was to take them to the Trade Mart, where the President was scheduled to speak at lunch. The First Lady was seated to her husband's left in the third row of seats as the presidential limousine, with the governor and his wife seated in front of them. Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson and his wife followed in another car in the motorcade. After the motorcade turned the corner onto Elm Street in Dealey Plaza, the First Lady heard what she thought to be a motorcycle backfire. She did not realize that it was a gunshot until she heard Governor Connally scream. Within 8.4 seconds, two more shots had rung out, and one of the shots struck her husband in the head. Almost immediately, she began to climb onto the back of the limousine. Secret Service agent Clint Hill later told the Warren Commission that he thought she had been reaching across the trunk for something coming off the right rear bumper of the car. Hill ran to the car and leapt onto it, dragging her back to the seat. As Hill stood on the back bumper, Associated Press photographer Ike Altons snapped a photograph that was featured on the front page of newspapers around the world. She would later testify that she saw pictures of me climbing out of the back, but I don't remember that at all. The president rushed for the 3.8-mile, 6.1-kilometer trip to Parkland Hospital. At the First Lady's request, she was allowed to be present in the operating room. President Kennedy never regained consciousness. He died not long after, age 46, after her husband was pronounced dead. Kennedy refused to remove her bloodstained clothing and reportedly regretted having washed the blood off her face and hands, explaining to Lady Bird Johnson that she wanted him to see what they had done to Jack. She continued to wear the bloodstained pink suit as she boarded Air Force One and stood next to Johnson when he took the oath of office as president. The unlaundered suit became a symbol of her husband's assassination and was donated to the National Archives and Records Administration in 1964. Under the terms of the agreement with the daughter Carol, the suit will not be placed on public display before 2103. Johnson's biographer Robert Carroll wrote that Johnson wanted Jacqueline Kennedy to be present at his swearing-in in order to demonstrate the legitimacy of his presidency to JFK Lawrence's and to the world at large. Kennedy took an active role in planning her husband's state funeral, modeling after Abraham Lincoln's service. She requested a close casket overruling the wishes of her brother-in-law Robert. The funeral service was held at the Cathedral of St. Matthew the Apostle in Washington, D.C. With the burial taking place at nearby Arlington National Cemetery, Kennedy led the procession on foot and lit the eternal flame created at her request at the gravesite. Lady Jeannie Campbell reported back to the London Evening Standard, Jacqueline Kennedy had given the American people one thing they have always lacked, majesty. A week after the assassination, new President Lyndon B. Johnson issued an executive order that established the Warren Commission, led by Chief Justice Earl Warren, to investigate the assassination. 10 months later, the commission issued its report finding that Lee Harvey Oswald had acted alone when he assassinated President Kennedy. Privately, his widow cared little about the investigators, stating that even if they had the right to suspect, it would not bring her husband back. Nevertheless, she gave a deposition to the Warren Commission. Following the assassination and the media coverage that had focused intensely on her during and after the burial, Kennedy stepped back from official public view, apart from a brief appearance in Washington to honor the Secret Service agent Clint Hill, who had climbed aboard the limousine in Dallas to try to shield her and the president. Thank you for listening to this first part of First Lady Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis. Have a good week and stay tuned for the next part next week. Have a good week and stay safe.